and welcome to Islanders Anxiety, the podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this evening via Skype, once again, is my friend Mike Leiboff. And Mike, we actually have games to talk about. How exciting.
Yeah, they and they looked like kind of the good and the bad from what we saw last year. Like, we saw like the bad version of the team and the good version of the team in two different games. I think that second period of the Jets game was when things started to click, and I was like, okay, this I'm starting to calm down a little bit.
Yeah, I felt in the Caps game, and we'll get to both games in depth in a second, but I felt like as I was watching it, I'm like, yeah, this pretty much looks like last year's Islanders. Like, they weren't bad until the third period, which was bad, but like the first two periods, they were sort of okay, and I'm like, yeah, they're all right. They're just not scoring on any of these chances, and that's probably going to come back to bite them, and sure enough, it kind of did, so... but yeah, I think, you know, they look more or less like we expect them to look. They had a week off in between games, which I think people kind of forgot about. And we saw how this team did well with long layoffs last year in the playoffs. It was not pretty. And they had off from Saturday, their final preseason game, all the way to Friday. And it was nice that people got healthy, but it also meant some rust. So yeah, the opening game was last Friday night at the Coliseum against the Washington Capitals, who, as you may remember, are still pretty good. And, you know, I thought they were pretty even for the first two periods. Maybe the Caps had slightly better of the play. The Caps had already played one game. But they took a 2-1 lead going into the third, and the Islanders just had absolutely nothing in the third. It was pretty embarrassing and pretty frustrating, and as I'm sure it was for the Islanders. They just, every pass would not connect. They couldn't barely cross the blue line without the Caps getting the puck back and kicking it back out again, and so... it was pretty frustrating. Devon Toews scored a hilarious goal that pinballed off about 15 different people. So that was the only highlight. Other than that, they came, you know, a bunch of deflections from being shut out by a rookie making his first NHL appearance, which is basically the most Islanders thing that ever could have happened. You were at the game, right? So what was your impression from being actually there?
Well, I mean, it was good to be back, and it was, from like an atmosphere standpoint, it was great. The crowd was great, and there was more optimism, like visceral optimism, tangible, I guess, than I felt.
There was a ton of hype. Like, it felt like there was a ton of hype, more than so than usual, you know?
Yeah, and the team was definitely leaning into that, like, with the pregame stuff. Like, this, they wanted to drive home the point that, you know, I think we talked about it last week a little bit, too. Like, this, they're, I think, finally starting to understand the fan base and what, you know, we kind of pride ourselves in as a fan base, and they're trying to bring that up a notch. And that's what I thought. I thought they were doing a pretty good job of that from like a game production and atmosphere standpoint. And it took like 2 minutes of being inside the building before Down Easter Alexa was being played. And like, you know, it was very long. I felt good. It felt like Long Island. They should have been passing around, you know, Italian heroes on plastic plates and stuff. And people just let people eat them in the upper bowl. But I mean, the crowd, the tailgating was going on and all that. But then, yeah, the game, they looked, I mean, if the Islanders were tough to beat last year, basically every game, and you know, 65 out of the 82 games, probably, they just were a tough puzzle to solve. And they were that again. But the problem was that they didn't really have much going forward at all. And it was frustrating because that game could have gone 18 or 19 periods, and I don't think the Islanders would have scored again.
Yeah.
Unless Radko Gudas kicked in another one.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good way to put it. Like, it just felt like that third period felt like, you know, just really, really, really frustrating. And again, it was frustrating for me sitting there watching at home. It was frustrating for you sitting there in the stands watching it. I can't even imagine. Like, you could see the look on Matt Barzell's face was growing very, very frustrated. And, you know, they might have had a couple of seconds worth of his own time and with a couple seconds to go, but you know, you lose 2-1. It could mean a lot of different things. And in this case, it was just like, they literally just came up one goal short, and you know, that one goal, it felt like they were 10 miles from it. So, what are you going to do? You know, everybody was kind of mad and not feeling great. 2 days go by. Sunday evening at the Coliseum again, rare Sunday evening game. I can't remember the last time they played a 7 o'clock Sunday game. Was against the Winnipeg Jets, who have played, this was like their third game of the season, or maybe fourth game, I'm not even sure. Josh Morrissey didn't play. they started their backup goalie, who's got a great name, Laurent Boursois. What a great name. And everybody's hurt. Dustin Byfuglien is sitting at home wondering if he wants to play. But they still have some formidable forwards, and the Islanders came out with a 4-1 win. First period was kind of meh for the Islanders. Yeah, Winnipeg was kind of better. But the second period was all Islanders, and they just – it was awesome. I mean, that was one of the best periods I've seen them play in a long time, even stretching back to last year. They were just great. They got three goals. Josh Bailey, Brock Nelson, Anders Lee scored off a Scott Mayfield shot. Then Line A made it 3-1 just before the end of the period, and you thought, oh boy, here comes a comeback. But Anthony Beauvillier scored early in the third. Thomas Greiss was huge throughout the period, and they walked away with the win. And that might be the best game I've ever seen Anthony Beauvillier play in his career. Like, it feels like he's been here for 10 years, and he was just all over the place. I know he ended up with a goal and an assist, but he was awesome. I mean, he won number one star for a reason. Like, he was just great.
Yeah, him and Greiss, I thought, were spectacular. For sure. I was there with my dad, and I was saying, like, that the second period from Laurent Boursois was the most impressive three-goal allowed period I've ever seen a goalie play. I mean, he was amazing.
Yeah.
He stopped Brock Nelson on two different shots on the same breakaway. He stopped Komarov on a breakaway. He stopped Barzal in close. I mean, he was really, really good.
Yeah.
But Greiss was just... Because of that, like, I kind of forgot how good Greiss was the whole game. And I thought Varlamov was fine in the first game, too. Yeah. Like, I think the first goal, you know, maybe, like, if 50-50, you could call it that he should have saved it. But it was, I mean, that was a good wrist shot. And, but, yeah, for the two of them, Greiss was the better. So I'd expect, I guess, to see him tomorrow against the Oilers. And if Trotz does his thing where he, you know, plays the hot hand. And then... But yeah, of the forwards, I think the two best forwards so far have been Beauvillier and Barzal. Barzal was insane yesterday. I mean, he had a couple video game shifts against the Capitals, but yesterday, anytime he was on the ice, it was, you know, he was looping around the zone. He was doing like those old school Blake Como, zone orbits, but like his are a lot more menacing than Blake Como's were.
He looked a lot more like rookie year Barzal. Like, there's times when he just had the puck, and as Brendan Burke would say, he goes on the tour, and he just started starts, you know, skating around. And he was great yesterday against the Jets. And I'll tell you, you know, he's obviously in much better shape than I will ever be. Matt Barzal has forgotten more about hockey than I will ever know. But I think his shot is just kind of not quite there to be the sort of, like, you know, player that he wants to be. And if he could ever find it and bury chances like that one you're just mentioning, where he was like skating all around and he shook one guy off and then ended up with basically 10 feet of open ice in front of him. And if he can start to bury stuff like that, he's going to be, I mean, one of the best players in the league. Like, I mean, he already is, but he will take that next level step and be
he's definitely already one of like probably the five most entertaining players to watch in the league. And he's also something I was thinking about yesterday was, because of the way home ice advantage works, where you can match up lines, you know, the Islanders get the second change at home. I mean, he was out, and I know the Jets were dealing with Josh Morrissey being hurt, and, like, you know, they had five borderline NHL defensemen playing, basically.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It was you know, feel bad for them, but he was just taking several of them for a ride every time he was on the ice. And, you know, when they have that second change, like, he's going to be able to do that a lot. And, I don't know. You know, people always talk about, like, Austin Matthews' shot. Like, he's got an elite shot. Ovechkin, obviously. Like, if Barzal can just find, like, a good finish shot, I he's gonna score like some of the most beautiful goals you'll see. Yeah. The play yesterday reminded me a lot of when the overtime goal that Beauvillier scored against Bailey scored. I guess the Penguins.
Oh, right.
When Barzal basically stopped time for, like, you know, 10 minutes, and then Bailey scored on the rebound. But the two of them. I mean, Bailey was really good too.
The forwards in general were all really good.
Nelson. So I'm just going down the list right now, and obviously like the I think the line that has got the most shine, and, you know, we were talking before about how Beauvillier's kind of been the forgotten guy, but his line with Broussard and Komarov, believe it or not, like, just that seems like it's working.
Yeah, you know,
weird way.
Yeah, these mismatched parts. Leo had that that clear breakaway, the shorthanded breakaway against the Jets. And, you know, he ended up missing it. He didn't really get a ton on the shot at all. But I was thinking to myself, had he buried that, that would have bought him probably a couple months of goodwill. And people would have just been like gotten off his back a little bit. Not that he cares, I'm sure. But like that would have been like the highlight play for probably the first third of the season. And then, you know, it'd be Thanksgiving and you'd look and be like, Leo only has that one goal, huh? Wow, that's kind of weird. But, you know, you just remember it because it would have been just a huge thing.
That thing happened so slowly.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be able to chase him down.
Yeah.
It was so slow that you heard so many people like get eight or nine full Uncle Leo's out. Come on, Uncle Leo. Uncle Leo. Come on, Uncle Leo.
Yeah. It was very slow and it was so delicious. And then for him to just whiff on it and just be like, ugh, you could hear the air come out of the crowd too. With the goalies. No, I agree with what you said. I thought Varlamov was okay in the first game. You know, yeah, that first goal probably wasn't great, but, you know, it's his first game and you kind of give it to them. The second one, which turned out to be the game winner, was a really weird power play goal. Like the puck was just kind of loose and there was like, I don't know, five or six guys standing in front of him. And the puck sort of popped out and ended up right in front of TJ Oshie, who like literally just kind of golfed it in over Varlamov's shoulder. I'm not sure who could have really gotten that. It was a real kind of broken play. But I thought he was pretty good. But Greiss really, you know, and they mentioned this too on the broadcast, and we mentioned it last week too. I mean, we all were so excited for Robin Leonard's numbers last year. We forgot how good Greiss was, and he picked up right where he left off. He's just a very, very, you know, steady guy back there. And I thought to myself, well, this is probably going to be his last year as an Islander, almost assuredly his last year as an Islander. It's going to be weird when he's not there. So hopefully Varlamov can find that same sweet spot, or else, you know, you're going to have that safety net kind of go away all of a sudden, and hopefully you can, you know, you might be having to survive problems that you didn't think you had to worry about for a long time, because this guy was just pretty good.
Just trust him. I always thought Halak was really much better than he got credit for in his time here, but we've had him and, you know, between him, Greiss, and Leonard last year, it's just been kind of you know, weird having a great stretch of goaltenders you can trust. You know, Kevin Poulin isn't knocking down that door anymore. So yeah, it's right. Nathan Lawson and Kevin Poulin. Like, we're not making up players, right. which is fun. No,
they're all real. Look them up. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's been a while now. Like, it's Greiss and I know Greiss and Halak were really bad in the that season with Wade and. Right. But I mean, the whole team was just, they didn't do anything. They hung him out to dry for 82 games on an 82 game stretch. What are you going to do? And I think that season is just the outlier. And I think if Greiss gives us, you know, close to what he gave us on Sunday night, and Varlamov is, you know, kind of maybe raises his level a little bit, or plays the way he let up two goals to the Capitals. That's fine. Mm. You'll take that. And that is obviously paramount to the team's success. Our style is obviously predicated on playing well defensively and getting good goaltending. So very encouraging start from the two of them.
I would think that Greiss would probably start against Edmonton. And then they have back-to-back games Friday and Saturday. Friday in Carolina and then Saturday in Florida. So even if Greiss ends up playing against the Oilers and the Hurricanes, which, you know, he will, because he's always good against the Hurricanes. Varlamov's going to get right back in there on Saturday against the Panthers, I would think. So some kind of combination like that. So I wouldn't worry about it. But apparently they have the same kind of relationship that Leonard and Greiss enjoyed, which is like the other guy doesn't care when they're starting. Like, they just start and that's it. So it seems to be all good. As far as the defense goes, I thought they played pretty well in both games, definitely against the Jets. They held a lot of the bigger guns off the board. Ovechkin was very quiet for him against the Caps. I mean, he had a couple of chances, I think, but generally speaking, he didn't, you know, menace them the way Alexander Ovechkin has in a long, long time. And the Scheifele Wheeler line was very quiet for the Jets. You know, it's hard to make anything happen when the Islanders keep coming back the other way. But, you know, Line A got open for his shot basically because of a turnover at the blue line from Adam Pellick. But that was really Pellick's only mistake in two games. He's been great. Him and Pulock have been kind of all over all the top offensive guys that they've seen, or, you know, two games worth of top offensive guys. I'm sure they'll draw the McDavid assignment on Tuesday night when you're probably listening to this against the Oilers. But they've been great. My only complaint really has been about Johnny Boychuk. I'm a huge Johnny Boychuk fan. We talked about it last time, but I thought his game against Winnipeg was a little bit concerning. He seemed kind of slow, to react, slow to turn around, a little bit like a battleship out there, you know, just kind of wasn't getting around all that easy. And Noah Dobson still hasn't played yet. We don't know when he's going to play. Maybe he's healthy enough to play against Edmonton. But, you know, on one hand, it's tough to watch Johnny. You know, maybe he's got a nagging thing, but it's tough to kind of watch him start slow out of the gate. But at the same time, it's hard not to think it maybe opens up a spot for Noah Dobson to jump in there and get some reps. So, you know, maybe it was just Johnny not feeling all that well, and maybe he'll rebound. But, you know, whatever, 35, 36 years old. I don't know. It's going to be weird. But, you know, Dobson is waiting in the wings, and Johnny didn't look like a guy who, you know, was going to hold him back. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I thought the two I kind of noticed were him and Mayfield a little bit. But Mayfield just – I think that's just who he is. You know, his game isn't, you know, pretty on the eyes. He's I thought he had a couple of whacks at a couple pucks to, like, clear the zone on kind of long shifts that he just didn't do the right thing on. And had, like, I think he had one bad icing. But, the Pelech-Pollock pair, who I was so impressed with there, they looked just like every bit a number one pair in those first two games. And I never thought Adam Pelech was going to be good. I just thought he was just going to be like an unremarkable guy who we'd be joking about on this podcast, you know, 4 years from now, being like, remember that guy, you know, he's didn't play for another team again because he just was it's just such an Islander that we, you know, we thought he was going to be good, but he's completely turned on me and he is really, really good. He had a really nice play against, Mark Scheifele, and I think it was the third period where he kind of just shut him down. Nick Leddy was good. Nick Leddy has looked pretty like much like the Nick Leddy of old. And I think a lot of it has to do with his minutes have probably gotten easier now that we have an established number one pair.
Right.
And Leddy and Boychuk aren't going to be seeing, you know, the Lyonnais and Ovechkins of the world. They'll be seeing the Mark Letestu and Gabriel Bork. The Jets, honestly, like they had to. I always like to give away a personal award that I don't even. I call it the Jim Vandermeer. That guy's still in the league award, and Letestu and Gabriel Bork are definitely on the short list.
Yeah, Gabriel Bork. I didn't realize
it takes a little longer.
Was yeah, still
how
in
about
the league.
That guy? But he's there.
Yeah, and he had been there for a long time. I wouldn't even know.
the defense. I've had no really complaints about the defense at all. I think the first game. There seemed some rust. Like they were missing passes that I couldn't make up another excuse other than rust. Because like the breakouts are just missing by like 2 or 3 feet at a time. Honestly, if they had lost last night, this obviously would be a different conversation. But
yeah, for sure.
I don't think that any of the big lingering questions have been answered yet, but no new ones have popped up, which is good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, there wasn't any surprises, I would say, between these couple of games. They went about as well as you'd expect it. Had they lost to the Jets, people would have been upset because that team is, I mean, quite honestly, especially the defense is just not. I mean, even Paul Maurice was saying after the game, I mean, Paul Maurice is not a guy who minces words very often, and he was saying that, you know, their number one defensive pair was, you know, former Ranger Neil Pionk and I think 18-year-old kid Ville Heinonen or whatever his name is, and Heinola, I think that's how you pronounce it. And those two guys are not expected to be a number one defensive pairing in the NHL. Like, they just weren't. But when Josh Morrissey's hurt and Dustin Byfuglien isn't home and you've traded Jacob Trouba and Toby Enstrom is somewhere, I don't know where he's at these days, that's what's going to happen. So that's how it is. But, the Islanders did what they needed to do. They came out and won. And, again, they got a little bit sloppy in the third. Trotz even said so. But their second was just so good that it kind of propelled them going forward. One thing about Sunday's game, though, that came up was something we haven't talked about in a long time, the attendance. I think it was 9,900 and something at the Coliseum. People were concerned. I thought this was going to be – you know, not a problem anymore. They're moving back to the Coliseum. People were supposed to go. I think the fact of the matter is, and you were there, so I want to hear how you felt it was while you were sitting there. But, you know, from my feeling, my takeaway on this is, I mean, I've been tired of this story forever. And I think we just all need to kind of come to grips with the fact that this is the Islanders fan base. like, this is it. we know what games are going to sell out. Playoff games, games against the Rangers, games against the Flyers, the Habs, teams like that, maybe the Penguins. But this is the Leafs, I guess, now. But, like, if you're talking about a Sunday game against Winnipeg, as nameless and faceless a team in the NHL as you have, this is pretty good. And if you would ask me to come up with a number of how many people were at that game, I probably, before the game actually happened, I probably would have said, yeah, probably about 10,000, give or take, which is pretty much what it was. And if you had told me, oh, yeah, by the way, there was 9,000 people, I'd be like, actually, you know, that's pretty good for that kind of game, because this is just the way this fan base is. Like, they're just not going to turn out for games that don't have a certain hook to them. And we know what those hooks are. Playoffs, Rangers, Flyers, Habs, Leafs, and Penguins. That's it. Those are the, even games against the Devils don't sell out. Oh, I guess the Bruins too, because a lot of Bruins fans come down from the Habs. But that's just sort of it. But I mean, you were saying that the atmosphere, despite the empty seats, was actually pretty good for that game. And so it sounded like a pretty fun game to be at. I don't know.
Yeah. When I saw that people were making a fuss about it, I thought, you know, I'm actually very pleasantly surprised with the turnout, because it looked not, I mean, yeah, it wasn't full, but it looked exactly like an Islander game would look like at Nassau Coliseum when the Islanders were, you know, in the either good or in the beginning of a season when the hope was still high. Like, that's what it looks like. I don't know why anyone was surprised or embarrassed by it. Like, so, and I just don't like that Islander fans don't realize that this, like, where I saw Arthur Staple in the intermission, and I said that I was, you know, I was like ribbing him a little bit for the tweet, and then I was like, this is nice, this is a good crowd, I thought, and and somebody's like, well, you know, you must have very low expectations, and I mean, yeah, of course, I don't know, like, this is what it's been forever, and the fact that they were, you know, good last year and exciting, had an exciting run, and the Coliseum came back, that doesn't mean that fans were just going to pop up out of the woodwork and just start showing up to Sunday night games in October against the team that
people that have been staying away from these exact games for 30 years aren't just all of a sudden going
to
show
up.
You know?
Like, I don't understand, like, if this game was in April and the Islanders needed to win to clinch home ice advantage or clinch a playoff spot, like, of course,
right,
the place would be rocking. But yeah, I don't. I mean, it's the second game of the season. Like, well, you're right. We haven't talked about attendance in a long time because it was kind of, you know, the Coliseum last year. Nobody really knew what the situation. We all kind of had an inkling, like, yeah, the Coliseum will be back for this season, and there will probably be more games here. But last year, like, there was a second. Like, you don't get a second chance in sports ever, and we got one, and that's why people showed up. Like, sure, like, it's not going to happen with as much fervor this year until the games have more weight to them. Who cares?
Yeah. And all those Coliseum games last year were in the second half of the season. I mean, there was the one in December. There was the first one was in December. There was a couple there. And then everything else was sort of back half of the season. And then the Toronto game. And so, like, there were stakes there. Had those games been played earlier in the season there, they would have been just as empty as they were at Barclays Center. Like, that's just how it is. So, you know, this fan base is A, very small, B, very jaded and, you know, abused, as we say all the time. And they turn out for very specific games. That's how it is. Now, of course, you try and explain this to, you know, I can imagine, I know what's, well, I don't know how much traveling media Edmonton has, but, like, you try and explain this to an Edmonton beat writer if they start taking pictures of the empty seats tomorrow night or Tuesday night, you know, they're not going to care. But I think for us, we just need to kind of understand that. Like, that's just how it is. This fan base turns out for specific games at specific times and not just for every single game all the time. It's just how it is. Maybe it'll change at some point. But.
And to be honest, like, that's fine. Like, especially for someone who goes to a lot of games, like, that's, that's, like, the perfect crowd for a Sunday night. Like, you could kind of, there's no pressure. There's, you could spread out a little bit. There's, if you need to, like, move seats because, you know, your row is filled, but there's a row in front of you that's not, like, that's part of the charm of the Coliseum. Like, you could show up and be like, oh, my ticket says I'm sitting here, but I'm going to, like, you know, take a step back. Exactly. And, you know, you could walk around to the concourse. It was a fine crowd. The crowd was very happy because the Islanders won. and all, you know, the arguing and, like, the ego jockeying about, oh, you know, this can't happen again, needs to stop because it's going to happen again on Tuesday.
Yep.
And it might happen. I don't think it'll happen again. You know, Saturday nights, obviously they fill up a little more, but weeknight games, whether it's in Kings County or Nassau County. Like, there's just no one's going to be there. And I'm sorry, not no one, but the crowd that's going to be there is the crowd that you'd expect to be there. It's going to be the people who could make the game. 7 o'clock in Uniondale. It's not easy for a lot of people to make. And I fully understand that. And I don't understand why more people who have been around this fan base or in this fan base for much longer just make a big deal about it.
Right. Saturday, I expect to be full. It's alumni night, so
it's alumni night.
Be ready.
Sean Bates was there on Friday.
Yeah. Richard Park was there, Staple was saying. I mean,
I was so mad that he didn't tell me that when he was there. It was probably better for everyone involved.
He didn't want your you to stalk him. But you know, the two W's are the worst thing for the Islanders. Weekday nights against the Western Conference. That's the killer right there. Every year forever has been bad news for the Islanders attendance wise when those two W's get together. So, you know, just how it's going to be. So when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about another guy who is missing in action, so to speak, and, you know, get to look at that Oilers game and talk about some other things. All right, we'll be back in a second. In our first episode of the season, we spoke a lot about a couple of guys who were placed on waivers, Thomas Hickey, Tanner Fritz, I almost forgot his name there, sorry Tanner, and Josh Hosang. All three guys passed through waivers, through the magic of whatever, we're going to talk about that in a second. But since that happened, a lot has also happened. Thomas Hickey suited up for the Sound Tigers and said that, you know, he holds no ill will, he understands what's going on, and his goal is to get back to the Islanders as soon as he can. And then he immediately took a bullshit blindside hit from some dude on Springfield. He's okay, I guess, thank God. But it did not look good. And Thomas Hickey has a history of concussions, but it seems like he's been okay. And that hit was, oh man, I don't usually get too upset about that kind of stuff, but that hit was stupid.
Ridiculous. Apparently it was, the guy who hit him was Colin McDonald's brother-in-law.
Yeah, you know, C-Mac, you gotta smack him upside the head for that. That's ridiculous. I mean, he just blindside targeting it, whatever. Fritz is still Fritz. But Josh Hosang has given the Islanders a trade request, or has put in a trade request through his agent. You know, this has kind of become a little thing. It's a little bit died down now that the games have started. But according to Elliot Friedman on last Saturday's headlines during Hockey Night in Canada, he said that Josh has been kind of looking around trying to find a fit, but he isn't really hearing anything back. The quotes from Lou Lamoriello, I should have gotten these up before, were very weird, I thought. They were kind of a little bit stilted, if I'm being honest. He was saying that, you know, it was very weird. He was like, we're doing the player a favor, and, you know, we're trying to do the things we best we can, and blah, blah, blah. So it was kind of weird the way he said it. Let me see if I can find it. But, you know, it sounds like what they're trying to do is, you know, find a new spot for this player. Oh, here we go. So this is what Lou said on a conference call after Josh's trade request became public. He said, what has transpired is that his representative has simplistically, in a very respectful way, because of what has transpired over the past couple of years, asked if we could entertain maybe another team would possibly be interested in Josh. That's an awful lot of bet hedging going on there. Like, it's sort of kind of maybe he wants to almost possibly potentially find another team. That's not really the way Lou Lamoriello operates, but it's kind of strange. You know, he said there were no issues off the ice. There was no personality problems or anything. It's just this player feels like he's, you know, not going to crack this lineup, and he wants a fresh start someplace else, and that's fine. But, you know, Josh has a couple of things going against him. Craig Custance had a nice article about this on The Athletic today. But first and foremost is, unfortunately, his reputation, rightly or wrongly, precedes him. And, you know, player teams might not be willing to take on that extra responsibility. But an even bigger problem is the fact that there's a 50 contract limit. And a lot of these teams are right at the point where they don't want to add new contracts. There are 49, you know, 47, 48 contracts. They don't want to add another one because it limits their flexibility. And they, if they are going to use one of those contract spots, they're going to use it on one of their own guys. So I think Josh might be hearing a lot of, yeah, man, we'd really love to, but we don't have any room for you right now. And so that's also going to mean that Lou's not going to be able to get anything from him. And Lou also said that if they can't put something together, he'll come back and play in Bridgeport. We've yet to see that. But it was a little bit weird. You know, I felt weird kind of seeing another Islander put in a trade request. I remember, we all remember the last one, which was, I guess, technically Travis Hamonic, but that was kind of a weird situation. But we all remember the Nino Niederreiter situation. And this is a lot different than that, though, because once he passed through waivers, everybody kind of shut up about it. You know, there wasn't any like, oh, we're going to steal him from the Islanders. Like, all of a sudden, it became very clear that general managers in the NHL don't really feel like a burning need to acquire Josh Hosang, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you go down the list and you just name every NHL team and you say, would this team get Josh, would this team trade for Josh Hosang? Would they give up something? And like you said, especially with the cap, the contract limit, like, no, it's not, most of them would be hard no's. Like, there's like maybe three or four that I think might make sense from a, this, that team can take a risk on a guy like that. Like the Senators surely could do it. And, you know, maybe the Canucks, like teams that definitely aren't expected to win. But then you also got to remember who runs each of these teams. And like you said, like they're just NHL GMs for better or worse. Most of the time are just dudes who are old school and care about a lot more than whether or not some guy is flashy and has a lot of skill. I remain kind of optimistic with how this is going to turn out, because I think if it was going to, if this situation was going to spiral to the point where the Islanders would mess it up, it would have already happened. he's obviously a good piece, like a good piece that you'd like a good player you'd want in your organization from a on the ice perspective. Like he provides a lot of depth that and has skill, which the Islanders are short on, and players get hurt. So if he's, he doesn't, obviously he's thinking about, he wants to be in the NHL right the second. If he had just gone down to Bridgeport and played well, like he would be up, you know, first or second between him and Wahlstrom, if one of the guys in the top six went down. And he's probably not going to be that anymore, because he did this, these trade requesting, or he put in this trade request. So it's frustrating, but I don't think it's going to end the way that Hosang thinks it's going to, because that would have already happened. He's not dealing with Garceau. He's not dealing with like Mike Gillis or Fenton in Minnesota. He's right. Dealing with like Lou Lamoriello. Like this right. Guy's not going to give in.
Yeah, I was thinking about this on the way home from work tonight, you know, because we were going to talk about it, and I thought there's not going to be a Sebastian Kolberg situation here where they just kind of like pull the ripcord and just get something out there. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Lou is perfectly happy to wait for whatever deal he sees fit to take, and then take it, and Josh can deal with it how he wants. If that means coming back to play for the Sound Tigers, then so be it. If he's going to sit at home, then so be it. You know, the problem is, and, you know, again, the Customs piece alluded to this, like once you've been passed over on waivers by everybody, where do you think the trade is going to come from? You know, I mean, and there are reasons why guys don't get picked up on waivers. The 50 contract limit is kind of a big deal. Apparently some teams did kick around the idea of picking up Thomas Hickey, but that $2.5 million for the next, you know, per year for the next 3 years was a stumbling block for them. They didn't want to take it up. So you never know. And the fact of the matter is it's early in the season. And so a lot of these teams have seen, all of these teams have seen their prospects come through, and they're excited for those guys. So they're not about to just add somebody else's just for the fun of it. They're, you know, if they're going to add somebody, it's going to be one of their own guys who they're pretty high on. So Josh has a lot working against him, and, you know, this isn't personal. I mean, it's, apparently now that it isn't for Lou Lamoriello either. He says, this is not a player who is not a good hockey player. This is a player who did not make our roster, and what will happen in the future, depending on how he plays and how he compares to the players that he's playing with as far as a recall. Well, that doesn't make any sense. This is not a punishment. This is simply a hockey decision. So, I mean, you know, this is, the guy just went down, not because he was punished, but because, you know, he just didn't make the team, and now he's decided to do this. I don't know what's going to happen. And you see these trades thrown around. People sort of go and they sort of pick and choose other problem guys from around the league, and they kind of throw that together. I saw one today. I forget. I don't think it was the Crustance article. I think it was an article about the Stars and who are 0-3 to start the season. And somebody was like, why don't they just trade Julius Honka for Josh Hosang? Julius Honka, if you don't know, is still a last RFA holdout. He hasn't signed a contract with the Stars. He's a defenseman. He's a pretty good player. But as we've established last week, the Islanders have 800 defensemen that they don't, you know, really have a place for. So I don't see that happening. I don't see a Jesse Puljujärvi trade for Josh Hosang happening. He's playing in Finland, and I think the Oilers still have plans for him. So, you know, the problem for Josh right now is he just doesn't have any value. He's not bringing any value to any team, and I don't think any team is going to give up something of value to get him because they just don't, again, see the need to get him. He can go to the AHL because he's already there, which is kind of helpful, but again, somebody's going to have to give up something to get him, and I just don't see that happening. I wouldn't be surprised if, I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that by the end of this month, I think Josh Ho-Sang is back in Bridgeport, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's probably the most likely outcome right now, and yeah, I hope for our sake, as Islander fans, and his sake, because he's a good player, and you know, he's a different kind of player too, which is fun. Like, you know, there's one Josh Ho-Sang in the league, and we have him, which is cool. And hopefully he, you know, he realizes that. And also selfishly, because when during the Canadian national anthem, the Jets fans scream like "True North" when those words come up. And I was thinking that if Josh Ho-Sang was an Islander and he was good and he was producing and was like a mainstay Islander, we could say Ho-Sang during the American national anthem instead of "Oh Say Can You See." But that was
he would need to be a lot good, really,
yeah,
good.
Yes, exactly. Right, he'd have to really step things up. Right. But he could, because he is a talented individual. And the other thing too is, like, he's not coming up if Leo Komarov goes down with an injury. Like, we've seen how this team operates. If he's not coming up if Matt Martin goes down with an injury or Cal Clutterbuck, Barry Trotz wants fourth line players on fourth lines. He wants third line checking players on third lines. So that's the funny, like, that's just not the funny thing. It's just like kind of how it crumbles with the Islanders. So he's going to have to earn it. And if he's not willing to do it, I would say the most likely scenario is he's playing in Bridgeport. And the second most likely scenario is that they end up terminating his contract and he goes, plays in the KHL or something.
Yeah. I could kind of see that too. That would be, I don't know about the nuclear option, maybe the atomic option, or
Just think about the team that was this is how hard it is to get a trade done in this, especially in the beginning of the year. Like, the Islanders and Jets are perfect trade partners. I don't know why Lou Lamoriello and Kevin Chivalodeyev didn't just meet before the game yesterday and say, all right, like, you could take our Sebastian Aho and we'll just take, you know, one of your forwards that can score. Like, it makes perfect sense on paper. That's not how it works. Like, it would make a lot of sense for a bad team to take a shot on Josh Ho-Sang, but it's just, there's so many moving parts in the salary cap that it's hard.
The Jets are apparently still in a holding pattern because of Byfuglien. Like, and Friedman too, getting back to that headline segment, was very cagey. He was like, you know, people are like, well, don't, you know, it sounded like he got maybe directions from Byfuglien's agent. Like, you know, don't say we're going to retire or we're going to play because we don't know. So he was very cagey, but, you know, I feel bad for them. Like, you know, you have this huge missing piece. You've already traded a couple of your other defensemen, and now all of a sudden, you know, your defense is really literally six guys off the street, and it's a real shame. You know, you'd think that they would jump all over a Thomas Hickey, but, you know, then you got cap constraints and you got all these other things, and so it's a whole issue. And so, you know, there will be a resolution for Josh Ho-Sang one way or the other, and again, I think the most likely is that he ends up in Bridgeport, and everybody's very disappointed. But, you know, if he goes there and lights things up and changes things up, maybe, you know, we'll see him again. Let's talk about the game that's going on tonight, probably if you're listening to this on Tuesday, against the Edmonton Oilers. You know, it's still Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. They've got James Neal now, who, remember, was traded for Milan Lucic. The Oilers are one of the most fascinating teams in the league because their media writes about them in this sort of very scientific, strange way, and that is also dripping with, you know, homerism and just, I don't know, it must be a very remote place in Edmonton. There's not much going on there. And so they'll be, you know, shocked to come to the Coliseum and find 9,000 people waiting for them and booing them. You know, I don't know. Mike Smith is their goalie now, along with, Mikko Koskinen. How could I forget? I have no idea who's going to start tomorrow. Smith, like, basically gave up a couple of goals on his own to the Kings the other day. That's the last time I checked in on them. So, I don't know. Are you going to be at that game? Are you going to watch it?
I have softball, so if softball doesn't get canceled, I'll probably be there. But, it's tough because I think that team, like Connor McDavid, could just beat you on his own. That's why you get a little bit nervous. And obviously, like I shouldn't say on his own, like him, Dreisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins, that those guys can beat you, can beat a team. But the Islanders should win. Like that's a game that they should win. They're home. They'll have the opportunity to get the guys they want out against McDavid most of the night. So I'm cautiously optimistic about it. And how about this? I'm pretty sure it's Josh Bailey's 800th NHL game.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
Sixth all time.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's huge. I didn't even realize that. Amazing.
Yeah, when I heard that, I think it was Arthur Sable told me, when I heard it, I wanted to cry. I was happy, tears of happiness. Because you just think, I mean, what a ride. Like, just right. An absolute ride that guy's been on in this fan base. He's like, incredibly anonymous, except obviously remember that video from a couple of years ago. Mark Scheifele is a big Josh Bailey fan, so sure. I wonder if Scheifele got a chance to, you know, switch jerseys with him or something.
Autograph stick or something. Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, you talk about like one of the most anonymous,
right?
60 point, you know, basically can pencil him in for 50 to 65 points a season as a second liner in the league, and he's like, it would mean a lot if Josh Bailey goes from, you know, start to finish as a one jersey guy as an Islander, because the people that were drafted around him when he was part of that core with Oposo and Nielsen and Hamonic, Tavares, basically every, like that group, for him to be the last man standing and for him to be the one that actually gets from draft day to the day he retires as an Islander would that would just be the coolest thing.
Yeah, you think about how unique that is. Like, you know, when you think about it, every team, or at least most teams, have a guy who spent, you know, 600,000 games with them and was like, you know, this stalwart guy who everybody knows and wears the jersey and stuff like that. And then you've got Josh Bailey. Like, Josh Bailey has spent 800 games with the New York Islanders. And if you asked people to name the people, like if you said, all right, name the top six, you know, in terms of Islanders, you know, games played, I'm sure people would say, well, you got Bossy, you got Potvin, you got Trottier. And then how many guesses would it take for them to get to Josh Bailey? Like, nobody would think that.
Seriously.
He's never missed a game. He's been here forever. He's barely missed any kind of time with injuries. And he's just always there. And it's funny because I just noticed the Senators today announced that they're going to retire Chris Phillips' number. Now, Chris Phillips was like, you know, their first overall pick 1 year, and he was there for, like, you know, from their rise from dead last to Stanley Cup contender and all that stuff. And I'm just like, that's almost like the perfect guy to be the first number retired by the Ottawa Senators, because he's just such an anonymous, weird guy. You know, he's just sort of like a guy who just happened to hang around for 1,000 games or whatever it is. But, you know, to Senators fans, he was just always there. And, you know, he's kind of the rock, and it's sort of like, sort of like Bailey. I'm sure he had people complaining about him all year. Trade him here. This guy stinks. He's awful. And then before you know it, you blink and it's 1,000 games later and he's getting his number retired. It's weird, you know? So I'm not saying the Islanders are going to retire Josh Bailey's number. I'm just saying that he's in a very rare space of anonymous players that have been around forever.
I'm not really one for Hall of Fame and like arguments and like, oh, this guy belongs in if this guy gets in. But I actually think that, you know, all things considered, if he kind of keeps down this path, I would love to see his number retire just because he's stuck through it. Like this guy is, could have, if you remember when he extended his contract, I think during the season,
yeah,
where during Tavares' walk year,
it was early, and, like it was like November or something. Wasn't
and he
it?
Took, and it was a great contract for the team. Like, I mean, right, considering what he could have got on the market.
Oh, no, it was like March. Yeah. It was a great contract. Yeah.
And it was basically a, you know, yeah. Like, I totally understand that. I need to take this kind of deal if we have a chance at getting this guy who I'm playing next to on the books. And he obviously didn't work out, and he just went about his business in the next season and just did his thing. I mean, he's the last three seasons, he's played 82, 76, 82, and put up 56, 71, 56. So like, this guy is just, when you, at this point in his career, you just know who he is at basically at all times. And he has a little bit, just a little bit of kind of pizzazz and glitz to his game, but everything else is just solid, smart. If you watch, I posted on YouTube the other day, on Twitter the other day, because it was his birthday, without realizing that he was approaching the big 8800. But his draft video, he just talks about himself, and he's literally talking about Josh Bailey, 30-year-old hockey player. He's like, you know, I'm pretty good. I'm smart. Like, my coaches yell at me because I don't shoot enough. And I'm like, are you you're kidding me, right? Like,
oh, this guy, I gotta find this now.
Yeah, I tweeted out, and I think it was maybe the day before the home opener or the day of, and right. It's just him talking to him about being a Josh Bailey type hockey player, basically anonymous but good.
My name's Josh Bailey, from Bowmanville, Ontario. I play center for the Windsor Spitfires. Favorite NHL player is Joe Sakic. I think I'm more of a playmaker with good vision. You know, I think I see the ice well, and I always think pass before I shoot, which has got me in trouble over the years. And coaches telling me to shoot more and whatnot, but I don't know. It's just the way I play, I guess.
He's a good playmaking centerman with the ability to feed players, feed his line mates when he needs to, and shoot the puck when the play requires that.
That's so funny. That's right. Yeah. Well, he's a pretty smart guy, and he knew what he was getting into, I guess, when he started up. But yeah, that's pretty. And it's clear that his teammates all like him too, because they're all, you know, they don't mind, you know, not that they're going to say anything, but you could see that they're a pretty tight group, you know, and so he's got to be a leader in that. But I mean, he'll be the kind of guy who he'll retire. I mean, probably 10 years from now, whatever, he'll retire, and he's exactly the type of guy that will just stay on Long Island. He'll just stop, you know, you'll see him start hanging out at the practice rink or, you know, whatever. But he'll just become a part of the community, like he probably already is. So, yeah. Well, congratulations, Josh Bailey. And we would be remiss if we did not mention that Coach Trotz has passed the great Al Arbor on the game's coach list, which is pretty wild considering that he now coaches the Islanders. So that's a pretty surreal moment. But again, in very Trotzian fashion, he was like, I didn't even notice until I had the TV on in the background. I heard my name mentioned. And I turn around. I'm like, oh, I'm going to pass him. Oh, okay. I guess so. So there you go. It's pretty fun.
At the end of the game, there's like a little video of him asking for the puck, which I thought was great. Yeah. He's just the best. We should say it every episode. Like, we're just so lucky to have the guy.
Yeah, really. You know, talk about picking up right where you left off. Like these post-game press conferences. It's like, yeah, this sounds feels pretty good. And once again, everything he says, I'm like, yeah, I believe that. I'm with you. I agree 100%.
I can't remember what part of the year it was last year, but the Islanders were kind of going through like a little bit of a dip, and then they had a good game. I think maybe they won like 3-1 or something, and someone was like, you know, what was different? He's like, well, that's the Islanders. Like, the Islanders came to play today. And that's basically saying, like, yeah, this is what we're supposed to look like, and we finally do. Mm-hmm. And that's what me and my dad were saying during the second period. Like, the Islanders showed up.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. That was how they could play. Again, you take the competition into consideration. But, you know, I don't know if they'll be able to do that stuff exactly against the Oilers, but I think they're a little bit better than the Jets are. But, you know, we hope to see it. Okay. If you were at either of these two games, or are going to the Oilers game, or maybe you were at another game that was your favorite game of all time, and you have such great memories of your favorite Islanders game, we want to hear it. Remember, we mentioned this last week. I'm going to mention it every other week. Our phone line for the My Favorite Islanders Game podcast is always open, and we want to hear your stories of your favorite games that you've ever been to. Do not hesitate. We have two calls right now, which is about 5 minutes of content, so we need all of your calls. And I'm really hoping, don't worry about if somebody's mentioned the game before. If we get, you know, 1,000 entries that are all that Penguins-Islanders fight game from 2011, it doesn't matter, because your experience is yours alone. So we want to hear it. The number is, once again, 646-980-8857. That is the number to call for the My Favorite Islanders Game voicemail. Tell us your favorite Islanders game story. If you get cut off after a few minutes, just call back and call again. It's fine. Again, 646-980-8857. Call that. Tell us your story. We can't wait. The first episode of Islanders Award Winners posted today. I really hope you listen to it. I have had a lot of fun putting it together. Our friend Kevin has helped me. The responses seem good. I hope people are really enjoying it. It's a lot of fun. It's a little bit different, and it's about Dennis Potvin and his mustache and Al Arbor and his conversations with Bobby Orr and the time the Rangers got very, very mad at the All-Star selections. I'm not making this up. Emil Francis was very upset that the Islanders had two All-Star representatives and the Rangers only had one in 1974, And he and Scotty Bowman got into a whole big thing about it. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. It's really funny, so you should check it out. Islanders Award winners, it should already be in your feed. But please check it out, and I hope you really like it because we got more coming. As always, our sponsor is VintageIceHockey.com. You should go there. You should buy a whole bunch of cool T-shirts. Kevin's got them there. Johnstown Jets, Long Island Ducks, Long Island Cougars, New York Rovers. I should probably put a list together. New England Whalers, New York Golden Blades. They're all there, and it's awesome. It really is. You can use the code LIGHTHOUSE15 to save 15% on your order. That's LIGHTHOUSE15. The word lighthouse and then just 15, the number. And again, he's got over 100 shirts here. There's mugs, there's hoodies. This is great stuff. I mean, you'll love it. I promise. Just go check it out. Take a look. VintageIceHockey.com. Also, speaking of shirts, I want to say thanks a lot to Joe at Roosevelt's. It's actually spelled RSVLTS.com, but it's Roosevelt's. Joe is an Islanders fan. He was going to be at Comic-Con. I said I wasn't going to be at Comic-Con. He said, I was going to be at this booth, and we started talking. They have great stuff here. They got Ghostbusters stuff, Rocky stuff, and he actually sent me a Rocky t-shirt with a picture of Mickey, the trainer, Burgess Meredith on it, and it says, "Get up, you son of a bitch. Mickey loves you." And I can't wait to wear it to the gym. This shirt is too good to wear to the gym, but you can't get a shirt like that and not wear it to the gym. So I love it. Thank you so much, Joe. I really appreciate it. Check it out. RSVLTS.com. It's pronounced Roosevelt's. They got Teddy Roosevelt stuff there. I mean, come on. You buy Teddy Roosevelt shirts along with your Ghostbusters and Rocky shirts. And they have an Apollo Creed shirt that I'm waiting to get in my size because it's awesome. What else? Congratulations to Arthur Staple and Andrew Gross for their new podcasts. I'm sure they're going to do way more traffic than us. But they're both great, so you should listen to them. There's 100 Islanders podcasts out there, but they're really good. I'm sure you've already listened to them already, but congratulations, guys. They're both really, really excellent. And if Gross is going to start talking to Trotz and Islanders every week, we're done. Our traffic is going to sink like a stone, but there you go.
It's okay. it was a regression. It was the Islanders' anxiety. Everyone was saying we were going to regress, and so here comes the regression.
Here it comes. Yeah. Yeah. It was only a matter of time, really. But no, seriously. And the Staple and Parrish, No Sleep Till Belmont is great, too. You should check that. Mark Parrish is hilarious. He's so funny. And Staple sort of sets him up, and he just comes in with these great stories. I can't wait to hear more. Okay. What else? Anything else? How were the game experiences otherwise? Did you tailgate at all? Did you get a chance?
Not really. We did a lap, and it looked fun. It looked the same. The cars were honking, and at the end of last night's game, so that I can't wait to see what the next town hall meeting in Elmont when people talk about I went to an Islander game, and they do this crazy thing at the end, and they're all honking, and it's going to be hard to tell. It's like Crying Wolf. You don't. Those horns are not for that, for playing.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see what they come up with. But
we haven't heard much from the lawsuit front these days, so yeah, I guess they're progressing as expected. I think the window actually closes soon for any new lawsuits, so we might just have the last couple. I guess that's about it. I totally forgot this last week. The first thing I should have said: read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. The other day when it was the home opener, and I saw a whole bunch of comments were there, and I was afraid that another Josh Hosang flare up had happened. And then when I went to the comments, I noticed that there was about 150 comments about Dio and Sammy Hagar. And I was like, oh, thank God. This is what I come to this site for. In-depth discussion in the comments about the greatness of Dio and Sammy Hagar, which is a subject that I care very much about. So there you go. So, please read Lighthouse Hockey every day. I guess that's about it. So we'll talk to you on the other side of Alumni Night. Oh, you have to be going to Alumni Night, right?
It's up in the air. I know. I'm actually really upset. I have a 30th birthday party that I have to. It's going to be a tough one. But
this is the Islanders' 48th birthday. So
I know.
This is,
I'm very torn. Trust me. It's it's the old rock in a hard place where the rock is. I can miss Alumni Night in the hard places. I'll have somebody upset at me and hold a grudge because their birthday. You know, there are people who love their birthdays, and more. If you're one of those people, that's great. And this is just happens to be someone who would be upset. But Yeah, but I'm sure the attendance will be good. Don't worry about the attendance numbers, please. That's the big takeaway from this episode is please, 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 just it's not a big deal.
And there's your title right there. It's not a big deal. All right. Well, we'll leave that as a cliffhanger then. We'll see. Will Mike go to alumni game at the Coliseum? Find out next week.
100. There are 100 of them showing up.
Yeah, I know. I can't. 100. They also have a Columbus Day game against the Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues, 1 o'clock on Monday. So that'll be pretty cool too.
Yeah, I think I'll be at that one. Hopefully, if I can get my hands on an alumni list before, that might sway my.
Oh wow.
You know, because I mean, there are a couple guys that if they're there, you know, it's like if for some people it'd be like, you know, meeting when a wrestler, their favorite wrestler shows up at the Roosevelt Field Mall or, you know, Mariano Rivera or Derek Jeter shows up, you know, my version of Mariano Rivera is Andy Hilbert. So
my wife just showed me a picture of one of her students. She's a teacher. She's a high school teacher. And one of her students was at New York Comic Con this week. And she's like, oh yeah, my student showed me this picture. He met Billy Dee Williams. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And she shows me this picture of him. And she's like, yeah, and he met this other woman too. And I my eyes are terrible, and I could see from across the couch. I could just make it, and I'm like, what do you mean other woman? That's Nichelle Nichols. That's Lieutenant Uhura. And then I had to give it to my wife because she didn't know who Nichelle Nichols was and who was television royalty, science fiction royalty. I mean, so was Billy Dee Williams, obviously, but Nichelle Nichols was before Billy Dee Williams. And I was like, how could you not know who Nichelle Nichols was? Anyway. Go out and watch some Star Trek tonight. I know my friend Mike B is going to be watching some Star Trek. He's a huge fan. But okay, so if you're going to any of these games, enjoy. Maybe you'll see Mike there Saturday or Monday. And we will talk to you again sometime next week. I guess not Monday, but or maybe we'll see. We'll have to figure out. We never know our schedule before we talk about it. But we'll definitely be back next week, and we'll see where the Islanders are sitting. All right, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.